Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Command Zone Podcast. I am one of your hosts today, Jimmy Wong, joined by...
Hello, I'm DJ.
Yay. That's been done so many times.
Do you know what? Just every time.
Every time? Josh hasn't done it yet, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Okay, I'll tell him
It's because you're better at it, honestly.
Thank you.
Josh is going to beatbox next episode.
Oh, man.
To try to one-up you.
Yeah, and then at some point, we're just throwing a full-on banger before we even start. So Strixhaven has arrived. Really exciting stuff. Honestly, I think the internet has been collectively abuzz about all the spoilers and previews so far, and we have a bunch of MDF commanders is what we've deemed them. Commanders, yes. With two faces. Look at these.
I think that these are really cool. And, you know, we saw them every so often and we're like, wow, that's really unique. And mm-hmm. then they came in Kaldheim. And then they came in the very next set. They're right now.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is something that they're going to be using a little bit more often. And so let's devote some time to talking about these MDF commanders.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, who liked looking at the back of a Magic card anyway? Why not put another card on there? And that's what they did. And you might want to pick up some of these as well as the ones from Kaldheim. To do so, head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That is our amazing affiliate link. All you have to do is enter that and blammo, you're there. I was reading this thread on Reddit the other day that was like, why I love Card Kingdom. And I didn't even need to click it. I was like, customer service. I clicked it and it was customer service. They got great customer service. They deliver your cards on time. If something happens to them, because the USPS is a little shoddy sometimes these days, they'll help you fix that problem.
Wow, shade at the USPS already.
I know, right? And they have that cool new redesigned car too. And that car could be coming to your doorstep with magic cards that you were going to buy anyway. So go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Also, shout out to Ultra Pro. You know, you really have to sleeve these because I know Josh likes
good
to play
sleeves. You can't have like you can't have poor sleeves where you can like you get it, pick them up at a random spot,
yeah.
And you can see through the back and see it's a dual face card.
That's actually a good point. To play these in a deck, you need to have non-opaque sleeves, and some of the best ones on the market to us, Ultra Pro. It's who Josh and I have trusted for a long time. We use them all the time on game nights too, and those decks get a lot of shuffling out of them, and I use them to draft all that stuff. They're a sponsor of the show. Finally, last way to support the content is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So this episode is dedicated to Cody Blatt.
Cody, you rock.
I was going to say, Cody, you Blatt. There's actually a commander today that kind of has a Blatt-esque name, Cody.
So we're gonna devote that to you, Cody, when we get there.
Yeah.
We're going to be like devoted to Cody, this card evaluation.
Nice, I love it. Okay, so this is part one of our Legendary set review. There are so many new Legendary cards and cards to review with every set now that we have to dedicate different episodes to each because there's so much to get into. So today we're just covering the Muddle Double Face Commanders. There are five deans of the Strixhaven Colleges, so they're all two colors, and then there are also four of these extra double-faced legendaries that you can have in your command zone. So before we get into it, let's talk about what is a Muddle double-faced card. So DJ, do you want to break down when we first saw these and what they look like?
Yeah, in Kaldheim, we just got a bunch of them, and we got them with legendary creatures on the front, but oftentimes, like, they would even give us different stuff on the back, which is really cool. You don't always need to have a legendary on both sides to have it in the command zone. So it's kind of interesting to have, like, you know, Valky on the front, but then you can still cast Tybalt, the Planeswalker, you know, on the backside from your command zone, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the text, this Planeswalker can be your commander because it's Valky in the
exactly.
command zone. And then you also have Asika, the World Tree, which turns into a big ol' enchantment. That's a five-color deck on the other side. So it's a creature into enchantment, creature into planeswalker. Halvar is a creature into an artifact equipment. So they really push that boundary. And
yeah, and the color identity is both sides. Yes. That's an important thing to know, so that a Sika deck is a five color deck.
Yeah, and of course you can play either side from your command zone. So you kind of have a two for one there. In a lot of ways, people are comparing this to partner in a little bit, because in this set, there are creatures on both sides on a lot of these. And that actually is really interesting, because now you really do have a much more flexible choice.
Yeah. One thing that's important to note is that in Commander, they always say that the Commander is kind of like the eighth card in your hand, right?
Right.
But with these double face cards, you kind of have like a ninth card in your hand too.
Yeah. It's somewhere between eight and nine. Yeah. Because you have to, when you choose one, and this is something we'll get into, it's kind of stuck on that until it dies, or you find a way to bounce it back to your hand, or you can flicker it if it's on one side. So it really is this interesting like extra addition. So for me as a Commander player, and I don't know about you, DJ, but I like this sort of stuff. This, I think, makes the game a lot more fun for new players to come into, being like, oh wow, that's so cool. And that's what got me into the game originally too, is that exact emotion.
I like that sometimes they're situational, that you can play one at one time in the game and one at another time in the game. So I particularly gravitate towards some that have early plays on one side and maybe have like a late game value on the other side.
Yeah, we'll be talking about one of them today as well on the show. And a couple more things about the rules. So if you cast it and it dies and you cast it again, same commander attacks regardless of what side you cast it from. And if it dies, same thing on either side, the same. Like if you cast some of these as like, some of these are actually a sorcery. One of them is, I know for sure. And if you cast it as a sorcery, two of them, okay.
Three of them are.
Oh, man. Three sorceries on the other side. If you cast it, it will go to the graveyard. But then, because it's a commander card, you can choose to put it back in the command zone there, and instead of going to your graveyard for the sorcery side. So there's a lot of intricacy here.
Yeah. And then remember that your commanderness is tied to the physical card.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So if you are trying to get commander damage in, it's tied to the card. And somehow, if you were to, like, animate the
Halvar side of an artifact. Yeah, you turn like the equipment side into a 6/6 or whatever, like animate artifact type things.
Yeah, like your commanderness is tied to that card, and so that card would in fact do commander damage.
It's just a flying sword. Just like chop, 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 chop. Okay. Bouncing these back to your hand is something that we could cover for every single one of these cards, right? So the idea of playing it on one side, hey, look, I want the other one, bounce it back to my hand, or get a way to flicker it. So cards that are really great for this, one that just got reprinted in Time Spiral Remastered is Crystal Shard.
Favorite of mine. I love Crystal Shard.
Yeah, that was like the first time I think when I played against it, I was like, wait, I'm sorry, you're doing what to your own creatures? That's insane.
It works both ways. Yeah, we could geek out about like Crystal Shard for a while now. Yeah. But honestly, it is good to sometimes be like, well, my commander's kind of on the battlefield, not doing very much. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bounce it back and then redeploy it, you know, without paying the commander tax because it's in your hand.
Yeah.
You know, to the other side and get value on both sides.
Yeah, maybe your deck is built to actually do that. So you'll have Erratic Portal, Temur Sabertooth is one we talk about. If it's on the other side, you can also flicker it. And when it comes back to the battlefield, it's going to be on its front facing side.
Yeah.
Same thing goes for like some of the other, like there are some of those flip planeswalkers. I think the same thing. If you flicker, it comes back as the creature. Mm-hmm. And then if it's an instant or sorcery, then you're going to use cards like Archaeomancer, Mnemonic Wall to get it back to your hand maybe and recast it there. So there was an interesting thing. I saw it on Modo. I saw it get abused, but Cascade used to be the really interesting way to cheat the more expensive side of the MDFC onto the battlefield.
Yeah, Cascade used to only care about the front side of the card, and then once it met that condition of being able to cast it, you could choose which side of the card you could cast.
Right.
Tybalt and Valky.
Tybalt and Valky
was the big one.
Valky's a 2-drop, and what's Tybalt, like 7?
7-drop or something like that, yeah, powerful planeswalker.
So if you cascade something for 3, it goes through your whole deck and you find the Valky, but you're like, you know what, I'm going to cast the 7 mana side.
Do you know what, it just felt unintuitive, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like if you cascade, you should be able to just casts less. Mm-hmm. And they changed the rules that way, so you can no longer sort of cheat the bigger side into play. Notice that if we're reviewing these as commanders, these are in your command zone. You can't cascade into things in your command zone.
Yeah.
But these are also just double face cards that could fit into the 99 of your deck. And so if you have some cascade stuff, that rules change might be relevant to you.
Yeah, and typically when we talk about these cards, we talk about them as your commander because that's the most interesting lens to view it from for the first time, I think. A lot of these will fit, right? If it's like a +1/+1 counter commander, yeah, we'll give you some examples of where it fits into on the other side. But don't be afraid in the comments, let us know if we missed something because we like to look at things from one lens. Maybe the audience likes to see it from someone else and we can always learn something from each other. So Let's get into it with the deans from each college in Strixhaven.
Yeah, I really like that design of the deans being like one on one side and one from the other side, kind of managing their school. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially if you dive into the... I can't wait to only refer to Boros as Lorehold, by the way, from now on, because that's just, I think, the colors
it's
that
pretty
it
pretty cool, right? I like it a lot.
I like it too. Sorry, Boros. You know I love equipment, but not as much as Heart of Value. All right, the first card up is Kian, Dean of Substance. They belong to Quandrix, which is the mathematics school. On the front side is 2 and a green for a 2/2 legendary creature Elf Druid. You can tap Kian to exile the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it into your hand. Otherwise, put a study counter on it. So it goes to a exile zone and has a little counter on it that says studying this. And you can pay 4 and a green to create a 0/0 green and blue fractal creature token. Put a +1/+1 counter on it for each different mana value among non-land cards you own in exile with study counters on them. So if you use Kian twice, don't find the land, so they both go in the exile. You can pay 5, 4 and a green to make a 2/2, basically. Now the backside, whew, man, there's a lot of
reading. There's a lot of, yeah, we're going to have a lot of reading here.
Sorry, I mean, books are great, don't forget. Especially because...
Imbraham. Quandrix is like math. Math is better.
Yeah, math is for blockers. Math is better. Imbraham, though, is reading a book. It's Imbraham, Dean of Theory. So we have the Dean of Substance and Theory in Quandrix. Imbraham is 2 blue-blue for a 3/3 with flying legendary creature Bird Wizard. For X blue-blue, you can tap him and exile the top X cards of your library and then put a study counter on each of them. Then you may put a card you own in exile with a study counter on it into your hand. So... interesting there. You can pay 5 as X and then you exile 5 cards and boom, 5 cards with study counters, and that makes Kian much better. Unfortunately, it's kind of on the same card though, so it's hard to play both sides.
Yeah, so the front card, you tap it and you can draw a land.
Right.
Tap to draw land is fine.
Yeah.
It's pretty okay.
It's pretty okay. It is a 3-mana card. If you have to play it on turn 3 and tap it the next turn, that's a lot for your commander. So it doesn't seem very efficient. It's a little clunky, as you wrote down here, and I think that's a good way of describing it.
Yeah.
Clunky. Like it's like a school with a little bit too much homework. It's like, why did it take me so long to do this? I just want to pay less mana to draw cards.
And then the activated ability on this, of like, what do you want to be activating it for you to be happy?
5 minimum.
Yeah, you want 5 mana.
I want five, a 5/5, five, yeah.
Like, but
I
even then in like Commander, that's not like super exciting.
Right.
So like, I mean, maybe if you exiled like 7 or 8, then you start getting big chonky boys.
Yeah, like. But the problem is Kian can only do it once a turn cycle unless you have ways to untap Kian and then you're building your deck towards that. So then the intuitive person in me goes, well, then you want to play Imbraham and then have him out on as a 4-drop and then pay like 7 mana into this thing and then boom, you exile 5 cards and then you can put a card into your hand. So it's like drawing a card out of there. And then you have to, what, flicker this to come back, bounce it back to your hand and play it again, then to do the 4 and a green to make a 0/0.
And then there are different mana values too. So it's like, how many different cards along the scale? Like how many 7-drops do you have in your deck? You know what I mean? And are you going to likely get a study counter on each of those? And are you going to pull a study counter off of it? Like, you know, to like get a card back and then suddenly it's not, doesn't have a study counter to be able to get bigger.
That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize that it says for each different mana value. So if you exile 10 cards and they're all 2-drops, this thing becomes a 1/1 when you make it on Kian's
side. You're right.
So I straight up think the thing you wrote is the most interesting, which is you can actually tap Imbraham for just blue-blue. You can have X be equal to 0 as long as you have a card that's a study counter out there. Blue-blue, tap, draw any of the cards that Imbraham has exiled in the past, or Kian if you somehow do it with her. That's interesting, because then you could exile this for a ton. You're in a big mana deck, you're green blue, but you're never really playing this side, are you?
Well, I mean, if
Kian, I mean,
honestly, if you're looking at this from a broken standpoint, which blue and green can get to, if you have infinite mana, you can do crazy things. Like, sure, you can make infinite 1/1s, or even if you have a bunch of 2/2s exiled, you could make infinite 2/2s with infinite mana.
Right.
You know,
on the Kian side.
On the Kian side. On the Imbraham side, you can basically put infinite mana into it, or 100, I guess, or whatever your deck is. And then you can exile your entire deck with study counters on it, get back a Thassa's Oracle, and win the game like that.
That's a good point, right? You only need to be able to do as much mana as your deck. And then if you have the Thassa's Oracle combo, and actually, this gives you 2 blue for the devotion for Thassa too, when it enters the battlefield. So there is a Thassa's Oracle. So that's interesting. I think that would be the way to clearly win with this. You also have cards like Miss Hollow Griffin and Eternal Scourge. So anytime a card's in exile, those two cards will always come up as there are cards you can bring back from exile or somewhere or another.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that if you're going really spiky, I'm going to win the game with infinite mana with this commander, they're better commanders already.
Yeah. Thrasios? Hello. Yeah. Hi.
Thrasios is literally in Simic. Like, if you want, like, a mono blue Urza does this as well, you know. So I mean, it feels like clunky, and in the spiky way that you can abuse it doesn't even work as well as some of the stuff that we already have.
Yeah, so it's one of those cards where I think if you're going for a flavor, definitely try and build around this. If you're going for a little bit more casual, this is definitely a casual Thrasios in a lot of ways.
Ooh, I like that. Casual Thrasios.
I mean, because Thrasios, again, it's a card that needs to get reprinted a bunch because it's so popular in competitive and other, you know, like not other formats. It's just, it's a popular commander.
Puts a target on your head, though, and people know that, like, you're going to be doing broken stuff with Thrasios. Yeah. This could be a little bit better.
A little bit better in terms of not drawing that aggro. And, you know, you could theme it around Bird Wizards if you want, or Elf Druids. Those are always options, I think, with these cards to keep in mind.
So Jimmy, one thing that you mentioned is that these feel like they should be on the battlefield at the same time.
Yeah, it would be nice to have both Deans teaching me Quandrix theory, right?
Like, it feels like you tap one and then you tap the other, like they really work well together, which means I think that in a 60 card format where you have multiple ones of these, you know, you just like play one and you're like, oh, I have the other one. You play the other one.
Yeah, this does seem like these ones, at least not we're going to be talking about the other ones, the mythic ones in a second here.
Yes,
second
the Deans, half. The Deans. I mean, naturally, they work well together. They're Deans.
True.
They're synergistic.
Yeah. So I think that is sort of like the ultimate thing to think about all of these first Dean cards, is that they're really good in conjunction with the other half. So if you're going to be playing towards that, then you need to build around that in your commander deck, which means you're losing 5 to 6 to 7 slots to kind of make that going, unless you're already about flickering and bouncing and doing all that stuff in the first place. So I think it's interesting because you can't have both at the same time for the most part, unless you do some shenanigans with like Sakashimas, or
it's copy it, flicker it.
Yeah, stuff like that, right? It's a lot of work. So I would say let's always think about where these can fit in the 99. And I do like the idea that it's a fun tribal card, and just the X blue tap and draw out of those, because you can repeat it in the next turn for blue. This is the kind of card where I think people don't necessarily kill it on sight. They're going to let you activate it at least once. And when they do, and you bring a lot of stuff out, at that point, maybe you have the ability to grab a counter from the cards that you grabbed, and you can protect it. Whatever it is, you know, you can get a heroic intervention because you're in green too. So I think Imraham is interesting value that might slip under the radar.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's all move right on to the next.
The next one is one of our favorite names of the set. It's Plarg. Dean of Chaos.
Fitting.
One in a red for a 2/2 legendary orc shaman. You can tap, discard a card, draw a card.
Ah, so looting. Rummaging.
Four in a red, tap, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-legendary, non-land card with mana value 3 or less. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Put all revealed cards not cast this way on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Okay.
The other side of this card is Augusta, Dean of Order.
Order and Chaos in Lorehold.
Yeah, I like it. Two and a white for a 1/3 legendary human cleric. Other tapped creatures you control get +1/+0. Other untapped creatures you control get +0/+1.
Oh.
Whenever you attack, untap each creature you control, then tap any number of creatures you control.
Okay, wow. Lots of text.
There's just so much, like, you feel like you got to take it one thing at a time.
It feels like we're reviewing two cards.
Yeah, we are, and then, like, not talking about it. Yeah. So, Plarg.
Plarg.
Sorry. 2 mana 2/2, just a bear that comes down early. Mm-hmm. I like it when commanders can come down early and start doing stuff.
Yep.
And rummaging is fine.
Yeah, it's red card draw, or red white card draw in this case. Card selection, not necessarily card draw. Red's not going to get the luxury, and red and white are not going to get the luxury of seeing the card and then discarding. You got to discard a card first, but lots of red cards are like that in terms of the, you know, cathartic reunion type effects where you discard cards to draw some more. I think this 4 in a red is interesting. This basically says 5 mana, same as, by the way, Kian in terms of that activated ability, but tapping it. And you reveal until you get a non-legendary non-land with mana value 3 or less. Lots of really powerful cards in red and white if you want to build around this. You have Teferi's Protection that you could potentially cast off of this, which is pretty good.
Just feels like, but like, you don't always want a Teferi's Protection. You know what I mean?
No, of course not. Like, unless you're planning for it, right?
Like, sometimes you're like, I mean, it'll be really fun one of those days when you're out there and you're just like, oh, I need a Teferi's Protection, and you tap it and you just go and try to get it.
I'm going
to
build my deck amazing. So that's the only 3-drop in there.
And by the way, people do stuff like that, like where they try to build their decks around it, but I don't think you can build your deck really around it like this because it costs so much mana. Like you're not cheating mana by activating this ability. You're always paying five for a three drop.
Yeah. And it's a random one off the top of your deck, unless you have a way to get something up there. And red, white, you're kind of limited in those ways. You don't really have that ability. You got a little bit of scry, maybe you got some, if you have a scroll rack or something, but yeah, I don't love it.
Yeah. You're but right. Even if you have a scroll rack, sometimes it's like, I don't know, I just don't want to pay five for my three drop or my soul ring.
Like, it's like, hey, I have this like three drop in my hand. Okay, I'm going to pay one for the scroll rack, put it on top of my library, then pay five for my commander. So I paid six to cast this three drop. You know what? I forget it. Plarg is a little overcosted on the front side. Let's look at the back, which I think is much more interesting. Augusta, Dean of Order.
I like this weird vigilance that it has going on. It's a little bit funny because it's like attack, and then you can untap them all, and then you can choose which ones to tap or not.
Tap again, right, because if they're tapped, they get +1/+0. If they're untapped, they get +0/+1. Now, it says whenever you attack, I'm a little curious about the wording here, because it's similar to, like, do this thing, then shuffle, which is another shorthand thing they've been doing on Magic cards, instead of shuffle your library. I'm assuming it says whenever you attack, it means whenever you attack with one or more creatures.
Yeah.
They're just not putting that text on there. But the interesting thing, you can tap any number of creatures you control. So you can go to combat, swing with a 1/1 or whatever, and then say, like, okay, I want to tap my entire board of creatures if you wanted to.
Your whole board untaps, and then, you know, you can choose to tap whatever you want again.
Right. So you can get some sort of value from tapping it, untapping it. It's interesting. I think people have talked about Magda, because the dwarves and stuff will create treasures. It can attack, untap, then tap again. So that's like two activations on there. Glorybringer and cards with exert, like Combat Celebrant, which gives you extra combats.
Yeah, I think that Combat Celebrant is one of the only ones that are like really have a powerful commandery effect.
Yeah.
Otherwise, exert, it's like Glorybringer is fine, but a lot of times it doesn't kill stuff that we really want to.
True.
You know? Same thing with Inspired. That's another thing too. But Inspired as a mechanic, there just isn't enough. There's not enough depth when it comes to commander and powerful effects.
Yeah, I'm all about using Kiki Jiki with this card, because that means you can activate Kiki, attack, untap Kiki, activate it again. You don't even need to swing your 2/2 Kiki into combat to use it. It's tapped, and so the ability of Augusta helps untap it. You can use it a bunch. A Dark Heart Valkyrie is also a card that you want to untap and tap to give creatures sort of protection from dying. And then a lot of people mentioned online, could this be a deck that works with Zirda the Dawnwaker, which requires all of your creatures to have and permanents have activated abilities?
People like those sort of deck building restrictions, and it's a fun one to have, especially when you have those tapping and untapping stuff, because you can have an entire team of every creature does something. They don't necessarily attack very well all the time, but they all do stuff.
Right.
And so, you know, you attack with a silly Thopter or whatever, and then you're just like, tap, untap, I'm going to do this, tap, 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 untap this, and it could be a really fun deck.
Yeah, I could see a lot of combos and just sort of like build your own engine each time. You have to find a lot of pingers and things in white that give protection or whatever it is, but it could be really fun and kind of hard to deal with too. So I like that. It gives you value in the combat step, which is a lot better than just the Boros attack and you get some benefit from attacking, right? This is like, hey, we're going to let all of your creatures untap, and then you can tap them if you want again.
And it can still even be pretty aggressive, because it's a three drop that comes down, gives your team pseudo vigilance, but also just pumps their power. So swing in and attack really well.
Yeah, a lot to do there. Interesting stuff. Okay, let's move on to the next one. It is Shale, Dean of Radiance. This is the Silver Quill Commander. So one and a white for a 1/1 legendary creature bird cleric on the front side with flying and vigilance. This is like the card that you're never supposed to draft, by the way, the 1/1 with flying and vigilance. However, it does have an activated ability. Tap it, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature that entered the battlefield under your control this turn.
By the way, I'm going to draft this card.
Yeah, this actually, that part of it seems sweet. Play this on turn two. Next turn, you play a three drop. Tap this, give it a +1/+1 counter. Wow. And you can also attack because it has vigilance. Okay. On the backside, it's Embrose, Dean of Shadow, 2BB for a 4/4 legendary creature, human warlock. This one's interesting. You can tap it to put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature, and then Embrose deals 2 damage to that creature. And then the second line of text, a static ability, whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, draw a card. Interesting. Okay.
I really like the flavor here. I like the Dean in the back, like the black Dean, the Dean of Shadow, where it's like, I'm going to teach you a lesson. And so you get the +1/+1 counter, but it's also like, smack.
he's casting some magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The quill pokes you. And then if you die, you draw a card, which is actually kind of nice.
That's clearly the side that I think is by far the more powerful, because being able to just do your own +1/+1 counter synergies and then draw cards as you trade off or as your opponent opponent's board wipe is great. Because +1/+1 counter synergies usually need you to commit some creatures to the battlefield, and you don't want to overextend. But if you have insurance policies that can draw you back up into more cards, then you can have a presence on the board, put +1/+1 counters on it, invest your resources, and still be okay.
Yeah, and Shale is interesting because it's creatures that enter the battlefield this turn, so it can't just be like Machias the Lunarch, which lets you do it on all the creatures except for Machias.
Yeah, I don't really like the this turn.
Yeah, you'd have to find a way to pump out a bunch of tokens. This works great with Elspeth Sun's Champion, obviously, but, you know, ways to put like two or three things, you know, Lingering Souls type effects. I don't love it. The backside is much more interesting because of that static ability. If you have a way to get a lot of +1/+1 counters on people, people are saying that this is Embro's Dean of Skullclamp. Which I thought was funny. You just wrote bad Skullclamp.
Lets you know. Yeah, I wrote bad Skullclamp because it lets you know how good Skullclamp is. Skullclamp is two cards.
Yeah. So Embro's, however, can kill other things, right? If it's got if it's a 1/1, Embro's can tap to put a counter on it. It becomes a 2/2, and then it deals 2 damage to that creature. You're not going to draw the card off it, but you can, this is kind of a pseudo thing, removal for 1 toughness creatures.
Yeah. I mean, I could see. Yeah.
Yeah. I cried because I was like, if Embro's was a card that you could be legal in Marchesa, because she wants to put +1/+1 counters on creatures and they want them to die so they can come back, it would be amazing. But it's got this other side that is this color. I don't even know what color it is, honestly. I'm so confused. I don't even know if it's played
I'm
in
so
Commander.
Sorry, Jimmy. Are you okay?
Thanks. No, I'm not.
You're going to be okay.
I'm not. you put in one of my favorite cards in Kiki Jiki, which is Thornbite Staff.
It's just a powerful card. Honestly, it does broken stuff.
Yeah, you're going to be able to kill a ton of stuff. It has that infinite potential thing going for it, obviously.
Thornbite Staff has that text on it that basically when things die, you can untap the equipped creature. And when you're untapping the equipped creature with good tap abilities, you can do some zany things.
Yeah, very good call. And then, you know, there are cards and creatures and decks that will want to play this, like Tyam, Luminous Enigma, which loves having counters on stuff. But Chaos the Lunarker, again, would be good in here. Persist strategies, that was interesting, because putting +1/+1 counters, let's say you have Cauldron of Souls, you have a way to kill a bunch of creatures through a sac outlet, they all die, they come back to the battlefield with it, -1/-1 counter, you Shale, tap it, boom, that Persist counter goes away.
I like that.
And then Twilight Shepherd's also really good in this deck. Just look it up. It's great. Bazri's Lieutenant also does something similar. A lot of +1/+1 synergies. I think like the +1/+1 synergy camp is huge.
There's tons of directions. It's really deep. It goes in a bunch of different colors. If you ever want to make a +1/+1 counter deck, at this point in time, you just pick your favorite colors and you
and
just
you'll
go.
Find something. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You'll find partner commanders. You'll find something somewhere that will work for you. Okay. Let's move on to the fourth Dean, the one in Prismari.
Yes. We have Uvilda, Dean of Perfection. 2 and a blue for a 2/2 legendary Djinn wizard. Tap, you may exile an instant or sorcery card from your hand and put 3 hone counters on it. It gains at the beginning of your upkeep. If that card is exiled, remove a hone counter from it. And when the last hone counter is removed from it, this card, if it's exiled, you may cast it. It costs 4 less to cast this way.
Hold up. I thought it was going to cast it for free.
I did too.
I was so excited. It had so much text and I was like, oh, it's like Joyra. It's like, it's not like Joyra. It just makes
it's
it
not.
More. Okay.
It just
all
makes
right.
it cost 4 less. We'll talk about it a little bit. Okay. then we have Nasari, Dean of Expression. 3 red for a 4/4 legendary Efreet Shaman. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of each opponent's library. Until end of turn, you may cast spells from among those exiled cards. And you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. Whenever you cast a spell from exile, put a +1/+1 counter on Nasari, Dean of Expression.
Okay, I like that backside a lot more because it reminds me of Stolen Strategy.
I love Stolen Strategy.
Very good card, yeah.
It's a great card. The front side. That's the one that we're a little bit
iffy on. Now, 4 mana reduction, true. I like it. I'm down for that. But
only instants and sorceries.
And it's at the beginning of your upkeep. If this card is exiled, you remove a hone counter from it. So it takes 3 upkeeps to get 3 hone counters off it.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
And then it only reduces it by 4.
And everyone's looking at the card knowing it's coming. You can play clock spinning and other effects to get rid of counters similar to Joyra. But Joyra is just better in this regard.
Yeah, it really is. Joyra cheats everything. People have called it Super Foretell. But one thing about Foretell, though, is that it's face down. It's a secret thing. And this is face up, you know? So I could imagine this being like, okay, let's just like put a bunch of stuff down and then it's going to be cheaper later on. But this is face up. You can see it coming. Yeah. Another thing is that this works with X spells and Joyra doesn't.
Oh, right. Because when Joyra casts it out of exile as an X spell, then you can't, right?
It's just X is zero. Right. And with this one, it's reduced by four. So you can actually cast a fireball.
Okay. So that's making me a little more interested because, we all know what the effect is of having like a Nevermore's Disc on the board, right? Everyone knows it's going to happen. So they play around it or they don't play stuff or they attack you. This seems a little more interesting because you can play this and have a big fireball sitting out there and people are go like, well, I don't want to play creatures that die to it. Maybe I need to make a deal so that it doesn't target me because I want to get this down. But again, having everyone see it for so long feels kind of bad.
I know. I mean, would you play the front side or would you just play Stolen Strategy?
I think I would play Stolen Strategy .commander.
Stolen Strategy Commander is awesome.
Yeah.
You mentioned as well that the effect of playing spells from exile can grow your creature a little bit. Things like this could work well with
Paco and Haldin.
Yeah. For sure. But also, do you know what people in general are geeking out about a lot with this? Is it's the creature types. It's the Djinn and Ifrit and the art. Like, that's what people are like really excited about.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that people are like, oh,
I mean, I think this art is pretty cool for sure.
The art is amazing. I like it a lot. But they're like, oh, Djinns and Ifrits, like, they're going to be more in Magic because they've been mentioned, but they haven't been around for a while.
Okay, moving onwards. Let's talk about Valentin, Dean of the Vein / Lisette, Dean of the Root. This is the Gloomhaven commander. So Valentin, Dean of the Vein, 1 black mana for a 1/1 legendary creature vampire warlock, has menace and lifelink. Pretty nice. And then if a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. When you do, you may pay 2 mana. If you do, create a 1/1 black and green pest creature token with when this creature dies, you gain 1 life. Okay, interesting. And the back is Lisette, Dean of the Root, 2 green for a 4/4 legendary creature human druid. Whenever you gain life, you may pay 1 mana. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, and those creatures gain trample until end of turn. Huh. Wow, so each creature, whenever you're gaining life, they gain trample, they get +1/+1 counter, so it's a permanent stat boost. Pretty nice. There's front side too, though. Wow, graveyard hate, right? This first line of text, if a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. Jeez.
That's worthwhile. It's good to have in your command zone. You need to interrupt your opponent's graveyards in some way. And so having this in your command zone and being able to say like, look, I need to mess with the graveyard. Bam, I can cast it anytime I want. It's great.
Yeah, and it's 1 black mana. So this comes out as early as turn 1. You can stop a lot of shenanigans. It's interesting because, you know, I play an Anafenza deck, which is Abzan, so it has white in it. And that card is a very similar exile effect in its claws. And I'm always surprised how much it does in a game. Because there's so many times when I play and people go, oh, well, there goes my deck.
It's surprisingly good. Like, yeah. And I think that you guys need to play with Graveyard Hate a little bit more and then recognize when it works out because it is amazing.
Yeah.
But you know what? The backside kind of puts into perspective the +1/+1 counters, how some synergies can just put way more +1/+1 counters on it whenever
right.
you need to.
Compared to Shale.
Give
Dean
a trample.
Radiance.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, this one, it needs a lot of building around. But if you just want to play a green-black deck with life gain and you're always playing Lisette, then you're maybe doing a ton of tokens. You're playing ways to get those tokens out there and like paying 1 to get +1/+1 on each creature you control. And then they gain trample.
I like that they gain trample because a lot of the times when you're going wide, sometimes you need some way to get a little bit more damage through. Mm-hmm. You're building up those +1/+1 counters. And so giving a trample sounds nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think what you need to do is play an Infect deck with a ton of life gain.
Oh, Jimmy.
So that's hard to kill the Infect player, and then you play a set, and then you gain a bunch of life, pay 1 to give all your Infect creatures +1/+1 counters and trample. I mean, you're gonna kill people.
Why are you giving people these ideas?
I know Craig might be listening or editing this video. Okay.
It's actually really close to a card that we know, Archangel of Thune.
Right.
And we know that does have some combos in it. So Spike Feeder plays really well with this.
Ah, right.
This does have an activated... this does require mana to activate. And so... it makes it a little bit clunkier. You know, that's kind of a word that we've been using a lot.
Yep.
But if you have a card like Crystalline Crawler that generates mana with +1/+1 counters, you can go infinite.
Yay. So you're just constantly gaining life and you're doing that with the Spike Feeder and then you're going plasma, blah, 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 blah. All right, cool. Spike Feeder, infinite. It's a combination of words we've heard before.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the deans of the colleges of Strixhaven, but we do have 4 more legendary creatures, and these are pretty powerful, so really excited to look into those after we come back from this quick mineral break.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Okay, this first one is dedicated to our patron of the episode with the last name Blatt, because it is Blex, Vexing Pest, / search for Blex on the backside. Its front side is 2 and a green for a legendary creature Pest. That's a 3/2. Other pests, bats, insects, snakes, and spiders you control get +1/+1. And then when Blex, Vexing Pest, say that 5 times fast, it dies, you gain 4 life. That's like kind of like a meh at the end of it. And then on the backside, 2BB sorcery, search for Blex to find him. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may put any number of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose 3 life for each card you put into your hand this way. Wow.
So you could draw 5.
For 4 mana.
And 15 life.
Well, you're searching for Blex. So ideally, you're only losing 3 life because that's all you're looking for, Blex. This definitely seems like it's built for Constructed in that way, right?
I love the creature types on this, honestly.
Yeah.
Like if you look at it, it's pests, bats, insects, snakes, and spiders. Like this just feels like a really cool commander that could pump up those lesser known tribes.
Yeah, or you just play the Oops All Tribes deck with like Morophon or whatever, and Blex just is a lord for +1/+1 that can draw you some cards sometimes.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I'm looking forward to building that deck because there's just so many tribes out there at this point. The tribal support is through the roof. So there's only pests in this set, apparently, right?
Yeah, it's a new mechanic, but there are some pest synergies. I don't know if there's enough yet to build an entire pest deck. But you'll notice like random pests here and there, and you can have some synergy.
Yeah, and you're searching for them too. The insects, however, Mazurek, Crow, Death Priest, that's a commander that Josh failed to build a long time ago. Famously, he always talks about it. Scoot Swarm is an insect. Man, I've died to that a few times.
Yeah, Saber Ants creates more insects when it hits people. There's actually a surprising number of insects and existing insect archetypes.
Oh, okay. And then snakes, there is no blue and no good Sultai commander. The closest I was thinking was like Kaseto Orochi Archmage, but that was a prop
that's in
special.
Simic, and there's a lot of blue snakes out there that are really good, and this is in Golgari, you're missing out on a lot of your snake fun.
Yep. Bats, how many are those? How many of those do we have in Magic's history?
20.
Okay. Well, spiders, though, there's got to be a lot of spiders out there, right?
There are a lot of spiders.
Okay.
You know? So I could see this going in like an Ishkanah deck, in there being a little bit of an anthem to your spider strategy. I like that.
Yeah, and maybe you are in the deck that does not mind playing 4 mana to draw 5 cards and 15 life. Maybe you can do that.
You could just, by the way, just have this be a 4-mana mill 5 if you really want to get stuff into your graveyard.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Then the friend side really does nothing for you, right?
Yeah. That 4-mana mill 5 is not a good rate. I mean, if you want to get specific things in your graveyard, Buried Alive and Tomb are cheaper and more efficient.
Yeah, way more efficient.
Grisly Salvage gets 5 into your graveyard for 2-mana. Okay. Actually, I've been a really big fan of Winding Way. One in a green, and you get to put 4 cards in your graveyard, but you get to choose creature lands.
Oh.
And you get either creatures or lands. So if you need lands, you just go 4 deep and you take, you know, 1 or 2 lands. If you are looking for creatures, then you get your creatures back.
Wow. You know what? I need to add this card to one of the cards I talk about later because I didn't know this existed. And that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. All right. Not too much else to say about Blex. So let's talk about...
No.
Oh, wait,
I got one
more
thing. Okay. I got one more thing.
Okay.
With Vilas, Broker of Blood.
Oh.
where Vilas, where whenever you lose life, you draw that many cards.
Okay,
with
okay.
this, well, Blex, you could draw 20 cards.
Wow, 4-mana. You have to play Vilas in the Blex deck.
Yes.
You can't go the other way around.
Yeah, Vilas, and in the Blex deck, you search for Blex, and then you draw 20 cards.
Cool. And you lose 15 life, but Vilas is fine with that.
15 life.
He'll figure, you know, if you're playing that deck, you got some life gain in there. Okay, let's talk about the next one. It is a Boros legendary or mythic card from the set. It's a return of also a planeswalker that we've met just recently.
Yeah.
So the front side, want to go for it?
Yeah. It's Mila, Crafty Companion, 1WW for a 2/3 legendary creature, Fox.
Aw, so cute.
Whenever an opponent attacks one or more planeswalkers you control, put a loyalty counter on each planeswalker you control. Whenever a permanent you control becomes target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card.
Oh, okay.
On the backside, it's Luca, Wayward Bonder.
It's back.
4RR for a 5 loyalty planeswalker, Luca. +1, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. If a creature card was discarded this way, draw 2 cards instead. -2, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste, exile at the beginning of the next upkeep.
Okay. Oh, wait, at the next
upkeep. Which is different, because, by the way, I almost said end step, just because...
It's out of habit, right?
Out of habit, but it's at the next upkeep.
Okay.
-7, you get an emblem with... Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it deals damage equal to its power to any target.
Okay, so a lot to talk about here. Let's start with Mila, Crafty Companion, which is a cute little 3-mana fox. So I think, you know, this is interesting. We haven't seen this before. When an opponent attacks one or more planeswalkers you control, you put a loyalty counter on each planeswalker you control. So the Super Friends decks are happy because, boom, all of a sudden you're gaining loyalty when they get attacked. If you can block, then that's great. You can get to ulti faster.
Like, if you have... It makes it really hard for your opponents to take out your planeswalkers in anything but an Alpha Strike.
Right.
If they're trying to like, okay, well, I'll just send 3 creatures this way and take out this one's planeswalker, well, you've grown your other planeswalkers in the meantime. It can be pretty difficult. And let's not like diminish the second ability. Whenever a permanent you control becomes target of a spell or ability and of an opponent's control, draw a card.
Yeah. You know, if you're playing a planeswalker deck, that's a high target for removal. Mm-hmm. Even Mila is a high target for removal too. So that's just value there. It's kind of like the Leovold thing, right?
Absolutely. And so we've seen this kind of with like Dejiro with Eyes Wide Open.
Ah.
That's an existing fan favorite. It's a mono white planeswalker deck. But it does do something really similar where it reduces the damage done to planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm.
But adding a loyalty, Mila's ability is just better.
Yeah.
You know,
because
just basically pumps all your planeswalkers up if you get attacked.
Yeah.
Do you think politically you would attack me just so that I could pump up my planeswalkers?
Oh, man. It depends on what you're going to do with it. Because if it's like...
I mean, can see my plan. I just got a bunch of Elspeths, a few Johnnies. You want to attack me?
Jeez, no, probably not. I would attack you, the person, maybe. Kill the player, not the planeswalker, as I once famously said on this episode of the podcast. But yeah, it's interesting. I think you want to play maybe cards that help create... you know, force combat, and there's like Master Warcraft, there's goad abilities. And so if you're making people attack in and you have really good blockers, that could be really interesting too.
Well, those forcing combat works really well in planeswalker decks anyways. Like goad has them sending your creatures at other players.
Right,
you can just like say, okay, I basically time walked, you know, combat so I can just keep ticking up my planeswalkers over and over again.
If you swing at me, if you're not good and you're trying to swing at me, I gain loyalty. Otherwise, I'm going to play the goads and the Master Warcrafts to decide combat my way.
So you're really looking for a critical mass of planeswalkers to highlight this ability, right?
Yeah.
Then we flip over to Luca, and you kind of want a critical mass of creatures so that you can draw 2 cards as you discard them.
Doesn't seem like we're building towards a theme here. It seems like both of them kind of pull you in different directions then, huh?
And Luca's big, like, -2 pulls a creature back from the graveyard.
Yeah, that's actually pretty powerful, right? You can place, it's 6 mana through the breach type effect. In terms of, like, putting something from your graveyard onto the battlefield, you can't do the Eldrazi because it'll shuffle away.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a strong thing, and red, is, we're seeing, is able to do this bit, you know, with Sneak Attack and then the new Purphoros, and now Luca doing a similar effect here as
well. Yeah, but all, a lot of them that we've mentioned, like Sneak Attack, the new Purphoros, through the breach, it's all your hand.
Yes.
You know, so it's like a sneakier way. And actually, this Luca is pretty interesting because we haven't seen as much of this in red, maybe a little bit in like Duretti type effects.
Yeah.
A little bit. But for the most part, it feels black, like, you know,
bringing something back. Yeah.
Whip of Erebos kind of thing, or Chain or Nightmare Adept,
right,
to be able to pull a creature back from the graveyard and attack with it.
Yeah. Exiling at the beginning of your next upkeep is really interesting because that means that, boom, let's say you pull a creature out with Vigilance on your turn. It comes on the battlefield, it attacks, it stays there through the whole turn cycle before it gets back to your upkeep.
I think it just gives you more options to do like cheaty type things, which is fun.
Yeah, and you keep the creature around for longer, so it can be an aggressive thing, or it can just be 6 mana, get something back that's important onto the battlefield. But I think it's 6 mana is a lot. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a lot for that effect.
Yeah. 6 mana as well in red and white. You can play a Sun Titan. You can play Elspeth Sun's Champion. There's a lot of really big, powerful spells at that level by the time you get there for red and white.
But then when your Sun Titan dies, you can get it back. You get the enter the battlefield trigger, bring something back. Then you get to attack,
yes,
bring something back. And it has Vigilance, so it can block the whole next turn.
And finally, of course, you can -2 Luca on the same creature twice if you find a way to sacrifice the creature before it gets exiled, because it doesn't have the claws if this creature would die exiled instead. So you can play Luca, get the Sun Titan back, get another thing back, attack with it, has Vigilance, sticks around before your next upkeep, sacrifice it, then use Luca again to bring it back. So he goes from 5 to 3 to 1 loyalty.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key, is to prevent your creatures from being exiled so you can keep this engine going.
Mm-hmm.
Cards like Ilharg and Oketra, it doesn't matter if you exile them because they actually get shuffled back into your library 3 cards down, and drawing a creature is pretty good because Luca's plus ability lets you discard it to draw 2 cards.
Oh, that's right. So you want a +1 Luca, discard the creature, draw 2 cards, and then maybe on the second activation you -2 it then.
Yeah. But I got to say, my favorite thing to do with Luca is to cheat Brisella, Voice of Nightmares.
Brisella, oh my goodness. I've only ever gotten into play once and it lived for all of a turn before someone was like, I'm so sorry, it's so cool, exile it. I was like, no, why did I build this deck?
Oh, they exile. Same thing happened to me, and they're like, utter ended it. And I'm like, why didn't you upgrade to like... Because it messes with cards CMC 3 or less. Right?
Yeah.
And they had other end. And I'm like, why didn't you get a D-Spark or something like that?
Yeah. Well, that's a bummer. But yeah, that's pretty hilarious to get something crazy like that out. But yeah, it's an interesting effect. It's not that powerful. I think, again, if you're in the Planeswalker deck, I really like the Mila side.
I do like the Mila side if you're in a Planeswalker deck.
Yeah, and even just that second ability might be enough to play Mila. Just whenever a permanent you control, right? If you have a lot of high value creatures in an equipment deck, let's say, because they're going to be targets of stuff, Mila's going to get you a little extra value when those things get targeted. But you're Boros, so maybe people are looking away from you. We'll see.
Sometimes in a deck, you know, you're playing Mila for the front side and like you really want to get that protect mm-hmm. your planeswalkers. But then you're like, all right, I need action. I play Luca, and then you just change in a stupid like small creature for 2 more cards and that's fine.
Right. Or, you know, you do have creatures in those planeswalker decks. There are good ones that you play in those decks, and then you play Luca later on to get that back because your planeswalkers are out. You don't need the Mila part of it anymore.
So I can see some flexibility.
Yeah. Okay. Next up is Extus, Orik.
Oh, let me do Extus because you're going to...
Oh, that's how I'll do the last one.
Yeah, you're going to do the last
one. Cool.
Jimmy's excited about that. He's super excited about the last one.
I am.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
So Extus, Orik Overlord? Orik Overlord.
I don't know. It doesn't even look like he has a mouth, or it has a mouth. It's an interesting looking creature.
I would be intimidated if this was my professor.
Yeah, especially if it's pointing at you like this.
Oh my gosh. It's like, what's the answer?
I don't think he is a teacher, or they're a teacher, actually, fortunately.
I actually think this is like a big story point.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually Tybalt all along. That's the secret.
Damn you, Tybalt.
Everyone's Tybalt.
One white, black for a 2/4 legendary human warlock with double strike.
Mm.
Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, return target non-legendary creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. On the back, it's not a creature. It's actually a sorcery. So we have a legendary creature on the front, and then you can play a sorcery on the back.
The legendary creature is actually on the back of the card, notably. It's just much smaller than the creature it's awakening here.
Okay. It's called Awaken the Blood Avatar. 6 black-red for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast the spell, you may sacrifice any number of creatures. The spell costs 2 less to cast for each creature sacrificed this way.
Okay.
Each opponent sacrifices a creature. Create a 3/6 black and red avatar creature token with haste. And, quote, whenever this creature attacks, it deals 3 damage to each opponent.
Okay, I don't care about that backside at all.
You don't care about the backside? I love the backside.
I'm glad that they finally put Josh Lee Kwai on a card. Ah. You know, but, I mean, look at those arms. It's interesting, right? Each opponent sacrificing a creature, but it's 6 black and red. You have to sacrifice 3 creatures to make this a black-red total cost. I do like that it has this creature attacks. It deals 3 damage to each opponent. That seems like it definitely could make a lot of people lose life quickly.
So this is another card that I think works really well if you have both of them on the battlefield, honestly.
Yeah.
Because this Magecraft ability of being able to raise dead over and over again, that's a pretty powerful effect. It's not like a huge effect like draw a card, right. You know, but it is worth it. You know?
Yeah, and it's cool though, if you do have both out, you play Extus, you sacrifice creatures to play the sorcery side, and then when you cast it, you get to bring one of those creatures back to your hand. But it seems like a lot, because 8 mana, again, to reduce it, you have to. Extus, I like a lot, though. Just cast, it's Mardu, right? So you're just casting instants or sorceries in general. If you have ways to sacrifice creatures, put them in the graveyard, then amazing, check it out. You're going to return them to your hand. You do have to cast them again, it's not straight to the battlefield, but it is pretty easy to get this triggered, I think.
I actually like the Awaken the Blood Avatar, side. How often do you have just tokens? You know what I mean?
Right.
In your Mardu deck. You know what I mean?
Your Mardu
Aristocrats, your Mardu Tokens deck. A lot of times you want them to die. You have,
You'll drain people life.
Exactly. You have Blood Arse on the battlefield. You have all this stuff on the battlefield. And so in your command zone, you have a sacrifice outlet. And you can sacrifice almost as much as you want because...
That's a good point.
You can pay the command attacks with this too as well. So this is not like 10 mana next turn. You can still just sacrifice, 4 creatures next turn and still have it be black-red.
Okay, so...
I can envision you going pretty wide and then sacrificing a bunch of stuff and then blood artisting people out, and then you're also making them sacrifice, and then you have these 2 or 3 hasty 3/6s that attack and then drain the whole table for 9.
Yeah, it's a good point. When one of these horror attack or these avatars attack, it does drain 9 life around the table with 3 players. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to have some sort of thing where maybe you can even cast this multiple times a turn, let's say you have
7
tokens out. You sacrifice 3 of them, this costs black and red. You cast it, make a 3/6. You sacrifice the next 4 to cast it again for black and a red. So it's 4 mana total to make 2 3/6s that swing that same turn and do 18 total damage. That's a bit of a dreamland. You're having a lot of tokens out. Hopefully you're actually using those tokens for something and not
sacrificing them for a 3/6, I don't think that's worth it.
Yeah,
if you have 3 real cards like on the battlefield and you're just trying to get a 3/6 out, no. Eh. No,
but if
not
you got
great.
A blood artist, some goblin tokens,
yes.
A Zulaport cutthroat,
yes, that's the way
then
you
you're
do
cooking
it.
With fire. DJ.
That is the way you do it.
Okay.
And do you know what else? A lot of the times these decks, they run out of steam. You know, you do your thing, you sacrifice your whole board and someone lives or someone interrupts your combo and you're like, okay, well, I have to put everything together again. You have the front side of this commander to help you rebuild because all of the creatures that happened, you could just get them all back again with this spell.
Okay. So you're playing an Aristocrats deck knowing people are going to target your Blood Artists, and then when they all die, then Extus comes out, you cast a couple instant sorceries or you copy something and then boom.
Yep.
Nice. Dual Caster Mage, you wrote down here, I think it's a great card in this deck because you get to do it at instant speed. You can copy someone else's spell and you get the trigger off of Extus when you do that.
Yeah, I think that this, like a lot of the other cards in here, pulls you in 2 different directions a little bit. Magecraft wants you to have those spells, but this also wants you to have those creatures. You know, same way like Mila wants you to have Planeswalkers and creatures together. You know,
right.
So with this, you do kind of want to have that balance. And when you can have a creature that synergizes well with spells in these colors, like Dual Caster Mage, it's something to look at.
Yep. Okay, so X is some interesting stuff there as well. Let's move on to our final MDF commander, Moldo Double Face Commander. This is the deck that I guess we can spoil it right now. I play this deck on the next game nights. If it's not already out at this point, you may already have seen
it. We never know.
We're recording so much in advance right now because it's Commander Christmas. They're doing all the pre-cons with this. Thank you, DJ. You're really saving our butts here. Okay, so this is Jadzi, Oracle of Arcavios, which is 6BB for a 5/5 legendary creature human wizard. You can discard a card to return Jadzi to its owner's hand. So this is protects itself very well as an 8-drop. It also has Magecraft, which we just saw on Extus. Magecraft, whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card, you may cast it by paying 1 rather than paying its mana cost. If it's a land card, put it onto the battlefield. So that's cheating a mana cost. Anytime you cast or copy an instant or sorcery, you're going to pay 1 for the top card of your deck, and it could potentially just get cast
Amazing.
For that 1 mana.
That's so exciting to be able to cheat that much mana.
Yeah.
And there's a whole other side.
Yeah, the other side is what makes it all possible. It's Journey to the Oracle. It's 2GG for a sorcery. So again, this is a creature on one side, sorcery on the other. You may put any number of land cards from your hand onto the battlefield. Then if you control 8 more lands, you may discard a card. If you do, return Journey to the Oracle to its owner's hand. So 4 mana, play it, put any lands in your hand on the battlefield, and then if you have 8 or more lands, you can discard a card, and you bounce this to your hand, which then means that you don't need to pay the commander tax on the other side, Jadzi, because presumably that's what you're going to play next turn. Okay.
Okay, so break it down, because... Yeah.
Landfall. For sure, this is a landfall deck because this has one of the easiest play patterns of all of the MDF commanders, because you play Journey to the Oracle, you want to get 8 lands on the battlefield, you bounce it to your hand, you play Jadzi, now you have all these lands out to play Jadzi with, right? If you have 8 or more lands, that means you're definitely casting Jadzi that next turn, and then you're going to just start wanting to go off with cheap instants or sorceries, paying that 1 extra, stacking the top of your deck with Brainstorms and Ponders and whatever else, and boom, you're able to cheat massive things on the battlefield. But this was actually a really hard deck for me to build because I think I didn't get it perfect. It's kind of got this Golos flavor to it, which is like, let it stay around and you're going to see some real nasty things coming off the top of your library. So it's like, do you focus then on getting Jadzi out and casting copyable spells, or do you focus on casting huge spells with it? Like, you want to get Omniscience out. You want to get Expropriate to be played off of this. And you have, you know, a lot of different ways to build this. So I think, you know, the one that I enjoyed that because I was playing Quandrix, I was like, I want to play like crazy creatures with lure effects and make people have to block them and cast them with Jadzi and have tons of mana to do all sorts of tricky things. So that's the direction I sort of took it. It's a little bit hard though because I kind of shied away from Landfall. I just see so much Landfall these days. I'm just kind of bored of it.
It is the most, I think that Tetsuova is the most popular Simic deck.
Oh, well,
and so
go.
Landfall is a very popular strategy in this. I think it's super interesting because, again, it pulls you in two different directions. Like, how do you get all these lands into your hand?
Right, because if you're just ramping with Rampant Growth, they're actually not going to your hand. They're going to the battlefield. But you need to get 8 lands to bring this back to your hand. So you do want to ramp at the same time, but you also want cards in your hand to be put into the battlefield with this, because that's how it gets really powerful.
Exactly. So that's one thing that's pulling you in two different directions, just trying to, like, giving you deck building, interesting ways of deck building. The other thing is, like you mentioned, you want those small spells that you can then, like, hit something off the top that's big, and so you want those small spells and those big spells. It's like, hopefully it lines up and you have that Brainstorm and then you pay 1 and hit that Expropriate, but sometimes you have that Expropriate in your hand and you
cast,
and
casting Brainstorm actually triggers it, so then you look at the card then. So it's, you have to, like, kind of play into the Jadzi bit. Obviously, again, you have the scroll racks here that are much more effective because you're cheating mana costs. One thing I was, like, thinking about is how you get land cards into your hand and onto the battlefield, and so you want to run a mix, I think, of ramp in this deck, where you do have Cultivate, which puts a land in your hand. You also have Nylea's Intervention, which can put a lot of lands in your hand. Realms Uncharted lets you put lands into your hand, and the Graveyard, because your opponent chooses. Abundance lets you only draw lands if you have that enchantment out. And then that card you were talking about, that one in the green one from Modern Horizons.
Yeah, Winding Way.
Winding Way.
You just play it and just draw your lands. And the land count on this deck would probably be pretty large, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, and you can run the MDFC lands as well, because if they're a spell on one side and a land on the other, that counts as a land. So I think in this deck, you're running like 40 to 45 lands minimum, maybe even more if you're using a ton of utility lands.
One thing that's good about running that high of a land count is that you can really go deep in those utility lands, you know, because you... you know, you, sometimes you don't need all of the lands, but you can play something that's really impacts the board. Like you can put a Maze of Ith into the battlefield and have it work. You know what I
mean? And it's not going to be your land drop for turn either.
Yeah. Right?
So I think in this deck, you do play the explore type cards, which lets you put lands out quickly so that you can play Journey to the Oracle really early. Hopefully you have some sort of good draw engine, right? You need a lot of different things to set Journey to the Oracle up. You got to draw the cards to have the lands or play these like Nylea Interventions. And then blammo, you play that, boom, you get five lands, four lands on the battlefield, whatever gets you up to eight. You can play a Glacial Chasm in this deck as well.
Ooh, nice.
And just and stay away as you now have Jadzi putting out huge things.
I like this. It's big. It's over the top. It does splashy commander stuff. You have these play patterns where you're just dropping your whole handful of lands on the battlefield, doing these huge ramp spells from your command zone.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, and Temple of the False God is one of those lands where you don't play it as much because, you know, if you draw it on turn three or whatever, it sucks. But in Jadzi, you're playing all of those kinds of lands. I even put Amulet of Vigor in my deck because so many of those lands enter the battlefield tapped. So if you're able to get that in, I think, if you could play Urborg in this deck, you would too. So your utility lands can tap for mana. So hopefully your opponents will do that for you. And then the alt win con that I love in any lands deck is Sylvan Awakening. No better way than to beat everyone down with a bunch of buff lands, especially when it's like a Maze of Ith swinging for lethal. Come on, the flavor. I don't know what the flavor is, actually. So that is it. Those are the MDF commanders, all nine of them from this set. Really interesting build arounds in general. I want to see what decks these go in, because like we said, some of them are a little clunky.
One thing that I like is that sometimes you get a commander legendary, and it's like, okay, I know exactly what I'm building with this.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of that, by the way.
Yeah, it's just like, it feels very vanilla. And these feel unique.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're really different. And part of it is that they have both sides. And yeah, they might be a little bit clunky, but I'm excited to see what people make with them.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool too. Ever since Commander Legends came out, I think WotC has found some balance somewhere where the commanders are striking the right balance. We're not getting the Thrasioses and Kinnan Bonder, right, out anymore. We're getting more of these sort of like between a 5 and an 8 power level, depending on how you build it. And I think that's exactly where commander players like to get excited, because, you know, there are going to be the people that just want the most competitive thing ever. But for a lot of us out here, we want to build fun decks. And I think, like, I would build a Shale deck probably. I really like Valentin as well.
Yeah. I'm gonna build this one.
Exodus?
Yeah, I'm gonna build Exodus for sure.
Wait to see that on the battlefield, and it's gonna womp face, I'm sure. All right, so like we always do, we're gonna go through some categories here. Most powerful new MDF commander. I think we're pretty matched on this one. It's got to be the last one we talked about, Jadzi.
Yeah, it's Jadzi. I mean, that effect of just being able to cheat big things into play and do ramp card advantage, cheating mana cost. It's like what is powerful in commander.
Yeah, pretty good. And how about favorite new commander, MDF commander?
I think I gave mine away by saying,
I think that, I did too, by the way.
Yeah, where Exodus is mine. And if you're interested in a deck tech with Exodus, it'll be on the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel.
Ooh, so very nice. Make sure you do check it out, because DJ's channel is fantastic. And I love hearing that voice too. And I think mine's going to be Shale, Dina Radiant. I like the +1/+1 counter synergies. And I think the Embros side of it, there are some combos that I haven't discovered yet. Maybe you commenters out there can help us out with that. All right, to the listeners, what are you excited about in terms of things from Strixhaven? Do you like these new MDF commanders? Do you like the direction that they're going? Do you agree with me that they're a good power level? Or do you wish Wizards would stick more to that one-faced commander stuff that we're used to?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see a lot of Modal Double-Faced cards from here until forever, though, because this is two main sets in a row, right, with them.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see them coming back, and I think it just goes to show that Wizards likes this design space, and we should expect to see more. And I'm happy for it, because I like the design space, too.
They don't need to pack all the power into one side. They can split it amongst two. Not to mention, we got not just five characters on the front side, but you get five characters on the back too. And because we're only on one set for a lot of these, Strixhaven has so much lore to it. Kaldheim had so much lore to it. I feel like you're able to get more of the story, more of that Vorthos flavor, because you're able to tell two parts of a story now on each card.
I like that.
All right. Obviously, you're going to want to pick up some of these cards from Strixhaven, or maybe the Mystical Archive. Oh my gosh.
Jimmy, again.
Oh my
bling
goodness.
Bling people right here. The Mystical Archive is fantastic.
I feel like it was made for me. You know when they did the glass plane planeswalkers and yes. they had the Japanese versions? I was like, come on, Wizards, you know I gotta get these. And then I see these Mystical Archives with their amazing Japanese variants as well. These are gonna sell like hotcakes. I know it. And you're gonna wanna get them from a place that's gonna guarantee delivery to them to you in tip-top condition with great customer service. That's cardking.com/commandzone. And I can't wait to see these in action because I wanna play against them too, right? As much as I wanna have them in my own decks. Unless it's channel, you can't play that one. Very exciting stuff. And of course, Ultra Pro, our sponsor for the show. Make sure you put those cards. You know, it's really important with two-faced cards. Now's no better time than ever to double sleeve, DJ.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of double sleeving.
I know. Josh, we don't talk about
it. Yeah, we don't talk about it, but Josh.
Bad habits.
Yeah. Josh doesn't mention it. I mentioned it before.
Fortunately, Ultra Pro's got your back covered. It's got opaque sleeves so that people won't be able to see the backside of the cards as well, and they'll keep it in tip-top shape. Doing all of that supports the show as always. So let's move on to the end step. And it looks like, DJ, you got something cool to talk about outside the world of Magic.
I do. I got a few board games for Christmas.
Ooh.
I know, and I'm very excited.
In anticipation for when you can play them with other people.
Yeah, actually, yes. That's exactly what it was. So I haven't played this game very, very much yet, but I will. But I'm super excited about it. It's a game called My City.
Ooh.
And basically it's the way that it's designed is that you have different boards and you kind of have to very carefully build your city by placing things together. And it's almost like Tetris meets like Civilization, stuff like that.
So I
it's
think
like
I may have played this. Is there like a randomizer that you have to put something down to that color or something on each turn?
Yes.
Okay.
Jimmy's played it. You've played it.
Yeah, it's really fun, actually, because you're right. You described it perfectly. You have this little board, and it's not like you get to choose what goes down. There's different win conditions, different sorts of cities and things you can build to get to those, but you have to plan it in a way so that you don't waste space, too.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked an original game of this, like an old school game called Cathedral, where you had to place different things down and like sort of cordon off your area away from your opponents. But this one, these new games that they're coming out with are just like spectacular because like My City has like a whole like campaign thing. It like grows along with you. Like you can play a game and be like, all right, let's go on to the next one. You don't just play the same game. Mm. You open up another, you can just put another board out there and suddenly everything's different. Mm. You open up another win condition or another sort of like a set of buildings or something like that. And then it sort of changes along with it. And I've been really enjoying that.
Yeah. Sure. I played it once and I got stomped because I made my city and it was just like, I cannot place any buildings anymore. And I was just like, pass the turn.
That could happen for sure.
DJ, you like board games, right?
I love board games.
We got to have a board game night. I want to know if our viewers like board games too, because this is a whole field.
Oh my gosh. And like, I love board games. I am an amateur. Compared to the number, there are so many of them out there.
No
kidding.
People
that like know everything about them. So
yeah. And they'll buy the custom inserts and all that stuff too. Gosh. You know, I would love to, and maybe we can someday in the future do this. Don't tell Josh I'm giving him more work. But it'd be cool to do a board game show that's similar to Game Nights, right?
Yes.
Playing some cool board games. I would love to see Seven Wonders.
That would be great.
Yeah, but we don't need to interview all seven people. That would be chaos. All right, moving on to the cleanup step. Our editing, graphics, and logistics team here is Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Alfred Asaka, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nahn, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, and Sam Waldo. And special thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that often live behind us on set. And also start and end our show. Well, it's just starting our show because we put cool animations that Sam makes now at the end of our show. Ooh. So you can find him at Living Cards MTG on Twitter. That does it for this Strixhaven review. So much more to come.
Yeah, you're going to be seeing a lot of us.
Yeah, and so much love for DJ in the comments, by the way. I love to see it. So happy that I get to, right? Like I was gone from Mulan last time, but now I get to actually podcast with you. It's so exciting.
Woo! Podcasting.
Woohoo!
We have a lot of them.
All right. Maybe we should do another Bling episode. What do you think?
Yes.
I want to see the altars because that's one area I don't collect in, and I think that's really neat.
We'll do it.
Okay, cool. If you want to see that and you're still listening, most people have dropped off at this point. Let us know in the comments. All right, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.